Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Listen.
Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo, a priest on a mission to bring people of all different backgrounds together to learn, to love, and accept one another. Even if we disagree with each other, we still have a responsibility to care for each other. And I can't wait to welcome my guest, J.D. Flynn, editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency and a canon lawyer. He worked in the church as an archdiocesan chancellor, canonical and policy advisor to several bishops, a communications director, adjunct seminary professor, and he's also worked as a consultant to the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops, served on the boards of Catholic nonprofits and ministries. He's been published in the Washington Post and New York Times and First Things, National Review, and elsewhere. And as a canon lawyer from the Catholic University of America and a master's degree from the Franciscan University of Steubenville, this is going to be a discussion about a Twitter spat that we had about receiving communion on the tongue versus on the hand. And he direct messaged me, I'll be honest with you, felt like he was trying to pick a fight. I invited him to a conversation, and even though he resisted a little bit, he joined me in studio. Actually, he joins me from his phone, and I welcome him into the studio to shoot the shiitake. And if you want to support our podcast, please go to my website, platinggrace.com, and click on support, which will lead you to our Patreon page. And as a supporter, you'll gain access to premium content and other special perks. But for now, please join my special guest as I shoot the shiitake with J.D. Flynn. And welcome, J.D., for this deep dish discussion. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Father.
Yeah, many people on Twitter, when I invite them to have a conversation, they actually don't want to. And if they do, they're just kind of vile about it. At least we can say we're trying to be Catholic about it. And in so doing, what I want to do is share with people the original tweet that I gave. And I want to have not a dramatic reading, but the voice of our tweet as it was intended, because a lot gets lost in these tweets. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Having a sort of conversation mediated by tweeting is very, very different from having a conversation in person or even on the phone, isn't it?
Sure. And so here's the one that I saw. It was several days ago. Bishop Sticca writes, if a bishop bans temporarily communion on the tongue, it's not some liberal heretical plot, but rather a cautious attempt to stop the virus if it is present. Many times in giving communion on the tongue, saliva exchange does occur for whatever reason. Unfortunate that a small, and then he kind of continued on, and then your tweet said something to the effect of, you said, Excellency, as you know, I respect you immensely. Can you read that one? And I'd love to hear your words.
I responded to the bishop, I wrote, Excellency, as you know, I respect you immensely. And I do, Bishop Stick, and I have had many conversations together, and I really do.
No, just read your tweet though, because you're explaining more than I know.
Fair, Excellency, as you know, I respect you immensely. It seems there are two issues. One, the germ does not seem to permit such a prohibition, though it does permit a request. And two, at least two dioceses say there's no more risk of germs from reception on the tongue than in the hand.
Okay. And then what I did is I captured a screenshot of that because Bishop Sticca replies, I just find it incredible that people are arguing this. There's an international health crisis in the world with people dying and people are worried about communion on the tongue or hand. In a crisis, instruction from years ago does not fit. I'm done with this discussion. So I screenshot that. And then I tweeted out, hashtag Catholic Twitter. Like everything else on Twitter can be disappointing. FYI, rigidity is not holiness. Who you receive plus obedience, even if not your personal piety and preference, is more important than the general instructions of the Roman Missal in exceptional times. And that's how we met.
That's how we met.
That's how we met. Because...
That's right. And so here's my response. I tweeted, whoa, I don't know you, but I respectfully asked two questions of the bishop. That constitutes disobedience, and is blind obedience a Catholic principle? Also, the rule of law in the church is essential for the pursuit of holiness. John Paul II believed that. Do you?
And I actually didn't respond to any of these because as much as I am on Twitter, I'm actually not on it as much. And then you continued a few more, and then you eventually... DM'd me, which is direct messaged me, and
right. We ended up talking in DMs about this, and then decided to talk here. So here we are.
Yeah. So here we are, and I'm grateful that you're willing to do this because what I don't want to do is get stuck in the weeds, but really more importantly, talk about what you thought was me calumniating you because that's kind of what your second. Your second set of tweets were all about was a question on calumny. And so you listed about five follow-up tweets, and one was, in short, Father, right now you're accusing me of something very serious for reasons that escape me, but I promise that if you find yourself in trouble with your bishop, you will certainly want a canon lawyer to ask questions about the relationship between law, rights, and authority.
And I think that's true.
Well, that's true, but it kind of bewilders me because... I have a canon lawyer. I don't know why I would need you. That was a question that I asked in my mind after seeing this. But then you put in, if you think asking questions equals rigidity, you should read Fides et Ratio again. You've calumniated me and you should knock it off. I'm glad to discuss in DMs. No one who knows me thinks I am rigid. Parentheses. I am too grave a sinner for that. End of parentheses. And you do not know me. And so that's kind of what you put out there. I actually didn't respond to any of those. Were you expecting for me to respond to that? I'm just wondering.
Well, I was hoping that you would because I really found this idea that that asking a question is rigidity, that sort of accusation of rigidity, I was really surprised by it. And I was hoping that you would explain it a little bit. I'm hoping still you'll explain it a little bit.
And I will, and I'd rather do it in person rather than on Twitter, because
sure.
I do believe that there are some unwritten rules on Twitter. I mean, that's just me personally, because you've got a following of, you know, okay. several thousands of people. And I too have a following as well. I don't respond to everything on Twitter just because I don't have the time. But in a case like this, my original tweet was about the very fact that rigidity is not holiness, and I felt that your response to the bishop was a sign of rigidity. You asked, is there a problem with asking questions? But the fact is, in your response to the bishop, you didn't actually ask a question. You just cited two issues.
Oh, sure. Okay, I suppose that's fair. Actually, I did. So there was another tweet below my first tweet that in which, so I said to the bishop, here are two issues, and then I had a second tweet which said, how would you respond to those issues? Because I was genuinely curious. I respect Bishop Sticca, and I respect his viewpoint, and I have been looking, I had been looking at that point for someone to sort of explain to me how they understood the justification for a prohibition of reception of Holy Communion on the tongue in light of things that I understand to be principles of the universal law of the Church. And I'm very open to the idea that there is an explanation, but I'd spent a fair amount of time sort of asking for one, and I was asking Bishop Sticker for one too, and in my next tweet I was asking that, precisely because I really wanted to understand. It seemed people were able to justify something that I didn't see justified in the law of the Church, and I was hoping to find sort of a satisfactory answer to that.
Great.
So I wasn't trying to be rigid. I was genuinely trying to understand.
Yeah. And so what I saw, because again, I'm not following everyone's tweets. I'm just simply looking at the screenshot that I took was Bishop Stitka's, your particular response and his response to your first tweet, not your the one that actually ended with a question mark. And so here's where I'm coming from. Number one, as a priest of 20 years, sometimes I ask, like, how long have you been a canon lawyer? I mean, when did you graduate from?
I've been a canonist for about 15 years.
For about 15 years, okay. And so you've had some experience in the church. And
I've had a lot of experience in the church, yes, indeed.
But you've not had formation as a priest. I've not had formation as a canon lawyer, even though I took canon law. So we're coming from two different experiences. And on Catholic Twitter, do you think, and this is just a question that I want to ask you, do you think that it's a healthy Catholic Twitter that you see out there? I mean, do you see people's opinions as healthy and well-formed, or do you see a lot of opinions?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I see both. So I mute or block a lot of people who I find to be poisonous, frankly. I mean, I've been long in the practice of muting or blocking people who I think just sort of spew poison. But at the same time, I have had, in the context of Catholic Twitter, so to speak, substantive conversations. My mind has been changed many times. I've learned a great deal, and I've built, I would say, genuine friendships that have turned into friendships in real life, which hopefully I'm doing with you right now. So I think just like the rest of the Holy Mother Church, there are weeds among the wheat, to be sure, but I don't think that means the whole thing is poison either.
Yeah, and that's the real challenge, because there's a lot of great stuff out there on Catholic Twitter, but there's also a lot of divisiveness. And just for the record, I follow you. You don't actually follow me. I just noted that. I just noticed
I didn't know that.
And I'm not asking for anyone to follow me. Because, I mean, I can't keep up with emails, much less people trying to get in touch with me through Twitter anyway. But I followed you, and I can't exactly remember why. It might have been because of a suggestion, and because I do appreciate, here's what I appreciate, lay people who are educated in the church. But here's what I've also found, that sometimes lay people might, but always act like they know more than, say, a priest on a particular issue. And so I do see kind of like that give and take, but sometimes a pushiness that really just challenges authority of the priest, and we are going to talk about that, but also just based on what they know from a book.
Father, I hear you. I think that may be true. I have been an archdiocesan chancellor. I have worked in chanceries for 15 years. I now work in Catholic media, but I do a fair amount of canonical advocacy. I've been a consultant to the USCCB. I'm a consultant to
I read your bio in the intro.
I want to say that because the idea that I know what I know from a book is not consistent with the scars that I have from learning what I've learned in the bowels of Holy Mother Church. And if you've worked in chancery, you know that a chancery is a hard place to work. So
I think just working in the church is a hard place to work.
Yeah, working in the church is a hard place to work. And so I would challenge the idea sort of that characterization applies to me. And if you follow me on Twitter, you probably will find that that's not a reasonable characterization of me.
Okay, fair enough. And that's exactly the point. I only follow people randomly. I don't really know them unless I know them. And so there are people who I follow that I don't know. And your particular tweet rubbed me in a very snarky way. I mean, I'm just going to say it as that. It's like, because you really didn't, in the tweet that I screenshot, there wasn't a question. It felt lawyerly. It felt like you were just trying to to push the bishop into a situation where he would just have to try to explain his pastoral reasoning. And that's the hard part. So I wanted to ask you,
because I want to respond to that. First of all, I would point out, I mean, in my frustration, Father, with what you did by screenshotting one tweet, was that you screenshotted one tweet. You didn't screenshot the tweet after it, which was, you know, there's a character limit on Twitter, so sometimes tweets become more than one. And you also didn't give any credence to the fact that the bishop and I subsequently had a public discussion on this matter, which ended in a conciliatory manner, which ended fruitfully and amicably. Second of all, using the adverb lawyerly in a negative way is really problematic to me. It was lawyerly because I'm a lawyer, and because I think that the rule of law in the life of the church matters, and I think it especially matters in a time of crisis. And I don't think that being pastoral and being and observing the law of the church are at odds with each other. If they are, then the way in which one is being pastoral is a problem. If one is being pastoral in a way which subverts the law of the church, one has a problem. And so I sort of reject the characterization of lawyerly as something problematic, and I reject its sort of juxtaposition as a foil to the idea of pastoral care.
Yes, exactly. Because the law and the practice of the law should be very consistent. But in cases like, for example, a novel virus, it's not. There's going to be some exceptions to the rule. But the question was really just about communion.
Do you know that in 2009, during the H1N1 virus, the Congregation for the Discipline of the Sacraments was asked if that was sufficient justification to prohibit communion on the tongue?
I do. I remember that.
So you can say that it's novel. I think there are some legal solutions. Fundamentally, I've thought about this a lot, and I think there are ways in which the church can suspend a right of the church or respond in other ways. I think obviously the universal legislator can do what he wants, and so the Pope can respond in certain ways to say this right is suspended. But I don't think that when we meet a crisis, the first thing to do when we meet a crisis is to say, well, now we can throw out the rules.
But the rule that you're particularly asking for is whether or not someone could be permitted to receive communion on the tongue when it's been specifically asked not to.
No. The rule that I'm talking about is whether a bishop has the authority to prohibit a right established in the universal law of the church. It could be anything, actually. It is this. But the universal mode of reception of Holy Communion in the church is on the tongue. A person can only receive on the hand by, you know, special permission of the Congregation for Divine Worship and Sacraments. So what I'm wondering is fundamentally a legal question. Does the diocesan bishop have the right to suspend the universal norm of the church according to his own pastoral judgment? And I think that's a legal question that bears a legal discussion, but it's not sort of arcane or pedantic. It matters because the protection of rights in the life of the church matters.
Okay. So, and exactly what it would be the right that would be infringed? Is it just the way that a person receives communion? Is that the right?
You say just, but if a diocesan, you're a religious, is that right, Father?
I am.
So if a diocesan bishop sort of willy-nilly said, there's an emergency and no religious priests may celebrate the Holy Eucharist in my diocese anymore, in private, you know, for themselves, you would rightly be aggrieved by that. You would say, wait a minute, the universal law of the church doesn't give you the right to do that.
That's correct, but that
I'm
would
a priest and I'm allowed to celebrate Holy Eucharist.
But that's well, but as much as I appreciate that, that's not what we're talking about, because it creates,
right,
unfortunately,
not.
A vacuum.
We're talking about the reception of Holy Communion. And the reception of Holy Communion is something that everyone who's suitably disposed and comes at the proper time has the right to do. And the Church says that the ordinary mode of reception of Holy Communion is on the tongue. So what I was asking, and what I think for myself I've reasoned some answers to, but what I was asking is, well, okay, if this is what the Church says is true as a mode of its universal governance, What is the sort of a base of authority from which a diocesan bishop can subvert that? Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but what doesn't make sense to me is, as public people on Twitter and you're asking the questions about it, would there have been a better way for you to have tried to have gotten an...
Oh, wouldn't there have been a better way for me to ask it? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, and here's why. Because it came across as snarky. It came across, and here's where I'm going to just define rigid. It came across as a Catholic being rigid in a situation when there's a lot of emotions and feelings and questions and confusion going on. And now people are feeling like they can't even receive communion at all, even though they're properly right. disposed, simply because they have a right to receive it on their tongue. And the bishop has basically said that that can't be because of this situation for a temporary being.
And obviously all of this has changed so dramatically because the coronavirus epidemic has changed so dramatically.
Sure.
But, you know, your question, should I have asked the bishop in private? I don't know, maybe so. You know, from my perspective, your sort of assassination of me as rigid in a public way without coming to me first was problematic. So if you're saying, well...
Well, it's only because because I'm allowed to on the Twitter sphere. Again, that's just kind of an unwritten rule, whether it's...
What's an unwritten rule?
I can express my opinion about anything.
Why can't I then?
Exactly.
So this is, I guess, my point. Why can't I? So it seems to me like you're saying, hey, I thought you were snarky to the bishop, so I called you a name, and don't you think you should have done it a better way to the bishop? So I guess what I'm curious is, if you want me to say I should have gone to the bishop privately, doesn't that sort of by necessity require you to say you should have come to me privately?
Yes, but here's the thing.
Okay.
Anyone can express their opinion about it. I mean, that's just the whole point of Twitter, and I think I'm asking for the sake of Catholic Twitter. I'm trying to get people on Catholic Twitter to be a little bit more attentive to their own perspectives, respecting the perspectives and the opinions of other people. And that's why when you reached out to me in a direct message, I immediately replied back to you. But I didn't feel the need to reply to you on Twitter on the live feed simply because you were basically saying that I was calumniating you. Maybe you can give the definition for listeners what calumny is. And that way you can describe how you felt.
Yeah, calumny is essentially, you know, a false and defamatory characterization of someone or something. You might say slander.
Yeah, it'd be like libel and slander for people in the...
Yeah, yeah. So if you say this guy is rigid based upon a snapshot of the snapshot of one tweet that exists in the context of a thread, and also if you say this guy's rigid because he's interested in questions about the protection of rights, it seems to me you have detracted me without evidence. You've made a false statement about my moral character.
Sure. And that's where I can certainly apologize, because that wasn't what I wanted to do. I was making a comment on the reality that rigidity is not holiness. In cases like this, if a bishop says we're suspending it on the tongue, it would be rigid to keep fighting that issue, whether you were doing that or not. That couldn't
be
detected.
Well, I received on the hand because my bishop asked me to. But if the bishop... But I think we have, first of all, I appreciate your apology and I accept it. But if a bishop sort of violates the universal law of the church, if he acts beyond his authority, for a person to try to vindicate their rights, or for a person to ask questions about that, is not rigidity. I think you ought to think more about that.
I'll think about it, but here's the thing. Those rights that are given to us, are they truly divine revelation rights? Did Jesus say, you can only receive it on your tongue? Was that truly from Christ itself? I ask this question because the people ask the spiritual questions.
And the church is a human society.
Exactly.
And the rule of law exists in the church for a reason.
Exactly.
And the reason the rule of law exists in the church is to ensure holiness. And so if the church says, people have a right to do X, and the bishop says, I don't like X, they can't do it anymore, the bishop is acting contrary to the discipline of the church, and just because he's a bishop, he doesn't have the right to act contrary to the discipline of the church, and he doesn't have the right to say, in my judgment, it's the right thing to do. That's not what being a bishop in communion with Rome is. The communion of the church is a communion of three things: faith, governance, and sacraments. We can
all
believe the same thing. We can all share in the same sacraments. But if we don't accept the legitimate mode of governance of the church, then we have a problem with our obligation to ecclesial communion.
And so you thought that you were
disobedient to the legitimate precepts of his bishop, but it's also true for a bishop who sort of flaunts the universal law of the church, isn't it?
And you were defending the rights of people to receive it on the
top. No, I wasn't. I was asking a question. I was legitimately trying to understand, okay, these guys who are legislators in their diocese are issuing a decree. What is the basis of their authority upon which to issue the decree? I was asking that question because I want to understand it. Because when I obey something, I obey it because it's a legitimate obligation to me. And so I wanted to understand, okay, what makes this a legitimate obligation? And if they had an answer, then everybody who says I don't have to obey would have to obey.
Sure.
But if they don't have an answer, then we have to answer that question too.
And so what this does is it really creates legal, I don't want to use the word conundrum in a negative way, but just legal battles, so to speak.
It creates a conundrum. I think you're right. Because
but wait, let me finish. But it creates legalities around something that is not only communal and therefore legislated by the church's laws, but also something very personal. And it's just it creates in people personal piety for a particular practice. And we have to also recognize that people can sometimes follow the law, but their hearts are not really understanding the deeper meaning of the law. And so here's where the conflict can occur from a pastoral point of view. And so that was the reason for my particular tweet, not as a calumnious statement, but really just as a reminder of who we're receiving is way more important than just how we're receiving it at that particular moment. And obviously, you know, people can still receive Christ. I mean, again, you know, there is tradition of people receiving communion in the hands as early as what, you know, Council of Jerusalem. And so
probably as early as the Last Supper.
I'm sure of it, but I'm just talking about in the legal,
right? So they could communicate
in a legal church. Exactly. I mean, so
I think you're right. And so I have been trying to do two things on this issue. I had been trying to say, on the one hand, and I had tweeted about this, in a spirit oriented towards the common good, my bishop has requested that we receive on the hand, and so I did it. It was disorienting that I did it. In retrospect, now sort of being unable to receive the Eucharist at all, would that I could receive on the hand right now. But I have been trying, on the one hand, to tweet, you know, my bishop said we can't receive, my bishop asked us to receive on the hand, and so in the spirit of orientation towards the common good, I'll do so. On the other hand, this question about rights and authority has to be answered or should be answered or should be looked at because it's relevant too. So I had been trying to sort of put both of those things out there, and I think I think that's important. One can't sort of just be thundering about one's rights in a way that is divisive to the unity of the church.
Do you ever see that though from people?
You only saw the one. So I had been tweeting sort of regularly about having received in the hand and the importance of being deferential to the common good and those kinds of things. But you only saw the one, and so I can see how only seeing the one, you might have thought I was the sort of person who just thunders about rights without concern.
So one of the things that we're going to do in our carryout order, I'm just going to say it right now, though, is we need to make sure that we put one out of five tweets so that people can at least see that there's a complete thread, that there's a thread of thought. One of the other things, though, is when you mentioned to me blind obedience is blind disobedience a Catholic principle?
Yeah, I should have said obedience. There was a typo. Unfortunately, I couldn't edit it. But is blind obedience a Catholic principle?
Sure.
I think that's an important question.
Yeah, it is an important question. And I don't believe that at all. I mean, my institute is very unique in that we see the preeminent will of God as the true will of his people. Now, you would love the fact that I'm actually a consecrated secular institute, a member of a pontifical rite.
I do. I'd love to read your statutes.
You would. And so you would
sure.
love all that stuff. I mean, this is the quote unquote, and please don't think that I'm being disrespectful. I'm just kind of using generic terms. This is the geekiness of the Catholic law. You know,
people get totally
geeked out about these things. But can you maybe also just speak about how, because I'm going to speak from my point of view, how I am kind of flustered and frustrated with the whole rigidity and laxity that I see in the Catholic Church as examples of faith, when in fact the majority of the people who are very middle of the road, quote unquote, middle of the road, They just want to receive Jesus with a pure heart and just be part of a loving community that's not going to wonder, did they, you know, genuflect before they receive communion, or pick out whether or not I'm wearing all of the vestments appropriately. You know, I mean, there's just kind of this reality of a rigidity that I was coming from. Where was your place? Where was your position coming from?
Yeah, I mean, two things. First of all, a genuine intellectual curiosity about you know, the sort of presumption on the part of bishops to be able to do something that I didn't understand them to be able to do. And second of all, a response to the characterization of reception of Holy Communion on the tongue as sort of, merely a personal preference or something like that. Because, Father, I'll be honest, reception of Holy Communion on the tongue has transformed my spiritual life dramatically.
Sure.
And part of the reason for that, only part of the reason, but part of the reason for that is because I'm doing what the Church says is the normative thing to do. And it reminds me that I am not, certainly that I'm not God, that I'm before the living God in the sacramental presence, but also that my personal preferences should be subordinated to the direction of the Church. And the Church says that receiving Holy Communion on the tongue is the ordinary way of doing things. And so it has become a kind of filial obedience for me that has been very good for me. You can probably tell by having this conversation with me that I'm arrogant as hell. And having to be obedient in a filial way is good for me. And so I have seen bishops sort of denigrate people who receive Holy Communion on the tongue, saying, oh, that's just a preference or that's just a matter of piety. It's not. It's what the Church says is the prescribed mode of the reception of Holy Communion. And the Church does that because our words and gestures and the symbolic meaning behind them matter. They're the things that help make us think.
So now you're going to have to help me. You're going to have to help me. The United States Catholic Conference of Bishops, in their liturgical norms, you know, talk about how a bow and then placing your hand out or to be able to receive it on the tongue. Is it possible to make the reception of the hands understood as a local custom norm?
It is permitted in the United States, to be sure, and I think people who receive communion in the hand do so with a great deal of piety and reverence, and I don't want to denigrate them. But I received communion in the hand on Sunday. But the ordinary posture for reception of Holy Communion in the Church, in the Latin Catholic Church, is on the tongue.
Sure.
And it's only by exception that it can be done.
Let's get to the spirituality of it. Now I'm just talking from a pure spiritual point of view.
Sure.
It is very humbling to be fed. It's a very passive act, you know, but it's also very active in that you are opening your mouth to receive the Lord. And so there's a real beauty there. So people can definitely see the spirituality, especially if someone is using the altar rail and they're kneeling to receive communion. Yeah. Can you, from a legal point of view, also maybe explain a spiritual reason why people could receive it on the hand and still be worthy?
Well, people can receive Holy Communion on the hand in a worthy and dignified and beautiful and reverent way because the Church has permitted us to do so. The bishops of the United States ask the Vatican permission for people to receive communion on the hand, and they do so.
Yeah. I mean, people oftentimes quote the Saint Cyril of Jerusalem, you know, when you approach Holy Communion, make the left hand into a throne for the right, which will receive the king. And then Pope Paul VI talks about then with your lower hand, take the consecrated host and place it on your mouth, you know, is kind of like a way of you are growing and being fed, similar to maybe the way the apostles received the broken piece of bread.
I think Paul VI said that to clerics. And I mean, it's worth noting, you know, that the custom of reception of Holy Communion on the tongue emerged fairly early in the life of the Church.
Sure.
And the Protestant reformers were very, very eager to sort of return to the reception of Holy Communion in the hand because they felt that in some ways demythologized the sacrament. So there is sort of there's a lot more history to it.
There's a ton of history, but I guess in the present moment where I've kind of have to operate, Do you think the Twitter conversation matters? Now, you're going to probably talk from a legal point of view and say, yes, I think it does. But I'm not going to presume that. Like, do you think that the conversation on Twitter was the best place for it?
Look, Bishop Sticca actually didn't prohibit people from reception of Holy Communion on the tongue.
On the hand.
He asked, but he didn't prohibit. On the hand. On the tongue. He didn't prohibit them from that. He asked, but he didn't prohibit. He made that point. Did I expect that he was going to, on Twitter, give me the answer that I was looking for? No. So was I doing something that was The most fruitful, no. In part, I think people who receive Holy Communion on the tongue have been sort of, were at that point relatively discouraged by things that they saw bishops saying.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give voice to that because I feel badly for people who I have never felt sort of demoralized from the heart of the or from the heart of the church or ostracized by the heart of the church. I've always felt loved and appreciated by bishops and by the church herself. But I know a lot of people who have more traditional liturgical sensibilities who feel ostracized by the leadership.
No, listen,
I have a great deal of empathy for them.
You're talking to a priest in a way. My generation was the ones who just fought to be able to kneel during consecration. So
right,
you're talking to a person who feels that, but at the same time, after a priest of 20 years and working in several different situations from the church, you know, bigger circles to the more real pastoral one-on-one concerns, I don't think people realize what a priest goes through, much less what a bishop goes through when just trying to provide kind of care for people. It's tough, you know? I mean,
sure,
you know,
totally
from my point of view, I'll be honest with you. I've met people who are very zealous Catholics who receive only on their tongue, and it's really hard for me to give communion to them on the tongue because I don't think they fully understand how to do it in a graceful way. Maybe I should put a video out or something, you know?
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, you're the guy to do it because you see people all the time.
And the numbers of people that I see and give communion to, and again, because I'm a missionary priest and I travel around the world, I see it differently. And that's where I was coming from. And so I will officially apologize to you. And I like the word apologize because, you know, in its Greek, it just means revealing the logic, just trying to explain where a person is coming from. That's what you asked of me in the direct message, to apologize publicly.
Well, you offered it.
Oh, yeah. But I wanted to make sure that we did this for our people. I have just a few more questions, and then I want to know if you'll join me in the carry out order so that we can maybe just share what did we learn from this particular exchange. First of all, you know, did you think that I was attacking you? Is that how you felt, that I was actually
totally
attacking? Okay.
Totally, because you had the, you know, you screenshotted me and then said, here's an example of rigidity. So it felt like you were saying this guy's rigid, which hurt my feelings, man.
There you go. There are feelings that are involved. And in that, did you respond out of principle or out of your feelings when you kind of just threw out like the five following tweets out there?
I responded from a place of my hurt feelings and my frustration, my disappointment.
Yeah,
to be sure.
There is definitely.
I don't think the shoe fits. I don't think the rigidity shoe fits.
You don't.
But it might not.
But guess what?
Out of my hurt feelings from
just guess what? Just for your own safety and security, I have been called rigid. Me.
Sure.
I've been called rigid. I mean,
totally get it.
So, but I can't respond out of that. I mean, especially when we're trying to talk on public grounds, you know, in a situation like Twitter, I think.
Well, did it hurt your feelings when someone called you rigid?
No, not at all, to be honest with you. Here's why, because I think while you have had a lot of the education and certainly formation, we've had different type of formation and just how to deal with our feelings and how to respond on a pastoral public level. Like, I know priests who are just being blasted socially on social media because they might have written a book that kind of makes people question the church's teachings on certain moral principles, namely, say, LGBTQ community. And I know that those people are probably getting maligned publicly. And it's unfortunate because they're coming from a different perspective, and whether or not it challenges the church's teachings or church's moral laws, you know, that might require a conversation with that person more than something so public, because I think we're just kind of airing our bad news. But anyway, my feelings were not hurt when you were sending me these other tweets. I was actually really appreciative that you sent me the DM.
Yeah, I was glad that we had the conversation. I'll say, though, I mean, look, most of my best friends are priests. If your feelings aren't hurt when people call you names that aren't true, I'm glad for it. But I don't think that's because of your seminary formation. I think it's something unique to you that's a grace. But I think it's natural. I think it's an ordinary, natural human experience that's not overcome by seminary formation to have one's feelings hurt when someone who doesn't know them calls them a name, don't you?
Yeah, no, the fact is it might hurt, but it's not going to be what governs my life for that moment. There's ways to be able to move on.
Okay. So it might hurt your feelings, but you feel like you have the formation that would have had you respond in a better way.
And more importantly, especially as a public person, knowing that we're big targets as it is. You know,
sure.
We are big targets as it is.
And that's, I think, part of it. I think that's part of the reason why it hurt my feelings and part of the reason why I responded so well is because when people who, you know, people say mean things about either one of us and many other public persons constantly. It's just part of the game, and you've got to have thick skin to be a public figure. When someone else who is a public figure, you know, would do that without a conversation first, that's for sort of like, hey, you know, I'm surprised that you wouldn't talk to me personally, sort of knowing that an accusation that just sort of comes out of nowhere is not really fair. So that's kind of where it surprised me all the more. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And so what I want to do is when I come back, I want to just do a carry out order. You're going to hear, as well as the listeners, you're going to hear what I learned from this conversation with J.D. Flynn. And if you want to stick around, J.D., and you can just share what you think you might have learned. I'm not asking you to do it, but you can at least hear what my experience has been talking to someone in the Catholic Church who has been very involved. There was obviously discussion and disagreement and perhaps even some disappointment on Twitter about the Catholic Church between two Catholic leaders, one as a layperson but involved heavily in church circles, and one as a Catholic priest, you know, with a following to a degree. So when we come back, we'll come back with my carryout order and more Shoot the Shiitake in just a moment. And welcome back to my carryout order with J.D. Flynn here on Shoot the Shiitake. And here are some of the things that I learned, and J.D. was kind enough to stick around, and he may share some things from a layperson's perspective, you know, and that's not a bad word, folks, ladies and gentlemen. So being a layperson in the Catholic Church means that you are still baptized as priest, prophet, and king. I know that the churches, there's a distinction sometimes between the clerical, the ordained ministry, and the lay people, and unfortunately, there seems to be competition between the two. And at one point, people thought that only holy people could be priests and nuns, and Second Vatican Council blew that out of the water completely. My conversation with J.D. was to make sure that he heard that I'm not trying to create more of a divide between priests and laity, because before I was a priest, I complained to my priest about a few things. And I was grateful that he gave me an open ear and an open heart, which is exactly what I wanted to do. I was actually looking very forward to having this conversation because it helped me to understand what he was going through and what his feelings were. One of the things I learned is that lawyers have feelings. And I've always known this because I, you know, whether JD knew this or not, I actually was studying to become a lawyer as well. And my mom always said, you'd be a good lawyer. You'd be rich, but you'd probably go to hell. Just because I can follow the law and the letter of the law so much that I can sometimes forget the spirit of the law, which is one reason why I've been called rigid when I was first ordained and, you know, even for many years after that. But I have to remember that especially legal people, they have feelings too, and they're just simply trying to operate. But they also have a unique way of thinking. They have a language that is very different. It's a legalistic language, and that doesn't make it bad. It just makes it different. Especially when we're trying to talk from two different principles, whether it be legal or pastoral. JD made sure that I learned that they are not at odds with each other, which is something I already knew, but it's always good to be affirmed. Third thing that I learned is that Catholic Twitter is probably not the best place to talk about liturgy, to be honest with you. It's just not a good place to talk about it. Maybe it'd be better to have a conversation like this, and I would honestly love to have JD back and to talk about liturgical principles that are abused? Where are there flexibilities in the way we do things ritualistically, knowing that the rituals are man-made? And it would be an amazing conversation, but not for Twitter. The other thing that I have learned is that Twitter, if we are going to have a thread, you got to make sure you let people know there's a thread, like one out of this. And that way I could follow through a little bit more. The final thing that I learned is to make sure I don't tweet when I want to react, especially when it comes to public people. You know, capturing the screenshot of two people who have a larger following and me responding to it, maybe that isn't the best place for me to respond. But I was just kind of following the quote-unquote Twitter unwritten rules. And we know they're unwritten because, my God, I've been shadow banned a few times. I have had followers just completely eliminated from my feed because that's it. There are just no rules in Twitter. But if there is a rule that we need to follow on Twitter, it is the rule of charity, which if it was experience that I was not being, then I have no trouble apologizing because I believe in forgiveness. And the only way that you can really get the forgiveness is if you ask for it. And guess what? That doesn't just come from God in the sacraments. It comes from the body of Christ, who are the people of God. And so I officially, you heard it, but I will do it again, officially just ask forgiveness for any calumny that he may have experienced. But knowing where I'm coming from a little bit, hopefully he realizes it wasn't done out of malice, but really out of the desire to protect the spirit of the law and not just the letter of the law. JD, any thoughts from you hearing all of that?
Sure. Well, Father, first of all, having officially apologized, I would like to officially forgive you, and I'm grateful for your explanation. And if I was reactive, which I think I was, or if a bar conversation would have been better in private, or even just viva voce as it is now,
By the way, explain what viva voce means for people, because people aren't going to understand Latin. Again, they've not had the trainings that we've had.
In a living voice, in a conversational way, I'm going to use another Latin phrase here, and then I'll say what it means. But, you know, St. Francis de Sales talks about speaking core at core, heart to heart, and having this heart-to-heart conversation with you, Father, even where I think that there are places where I don't think we've resolved every point of disagreement, but I think we've had a conversation about them in the context of friendship and in the context of a conversation heart-to-heart, and that's a good thing. So I would like to apologize to you too for being reactive, and I'm grateful for your inviting me to have this more personal and conversation rooted in friendship.
Yeah, certainly. It was my pleasure. I don't feel the need to give any absolutions because I don't think that there was actually any sin on your part, to be honest with
great.
You. You were just reacting, and I knew that was a reaction. I'm grateful, again, that you were willing to DM me. And even at one point in our DMs, that would be fun to share at some point. At one point, you were resistant to even have a conversation. But I kind of pushed it and said, look, if you want to have a conversation, that's what I'm here for. And we can't.
I'm glad that you did. Yeah.
And we can't be afraid of conversation.
Right.
Because
that's right.
The
I'm
whole point of conversation is to lead to conversion. And that's whole
right.
point of this
right.
Shoot the Shiitake. Again, to all of our supporters, I want to thank you. I know that this is a different type of format than we might be used to, but I hope that it's at least helpful to you. Because we are going to disagree. We're actually, you know, JD said it, we didn't actually come to resolutions on all of our different points. And you know what? That's okay. Because we're not going to have all the answers here on earth. We can ask God in heaven when hopefully in our beatific vision, he's going to invite us to the eternal banquet. And I bet you he's not going to care if we receive it on our tongue or on our hand. Because more importantly, you got to receive it in your soul. You got to receive him in your soul. Between now and then, laws matter. Don't break them, but learn them. So anyway, JD, any final thoughts from you before I bring this show to a close?
Sure. First of all, I'm just reminded of the psalmist saying, you know how good it is when brothers dwell in unity, and grateful for the unity of our conversation now, and grateful for a conversation in unity, even amid, I think, points of disagreement. I'm grateful for your perspective, and I think it's helpful for me to understand, you know, you mentioned sort of the unwritten rules of Twitter. It wouldn't occur to me that, that you know, one piece of a conversation might be read absent the context of the whole conversation. I'm glad to know that. It helps, I think, to understand, okay, how can we be sure to give people the whole context of what we're saying here? And I think I also take away something which I've long known, which is that the value of an interpersonal conversation is so much better than a sort of conversation mediated by social media, which is where we find ourselves so often these days. So I'm glad for that reminder, Father. I'm glad for the reminder of your ministry and the work that priests do. As I said, a lot of my friends are priests, but the work that priests do, you know, tirelessly for the salvation of souls is demanding and oriented towards the welfare of people, and so that perspective, that pastoral perspective, is you know, can sometimes is different from a perspective of someone who's trained in law, and those things, I think, talking together helps us to come to a point of unity rather than a point of disagreement, rather than allowing a sort of false division there.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Give the last word to J.D. Flynn, my special guest. I want to thank him for taking the time and having a conversation about what we experienced on Twitter. We hope that this was an experience for you to learn something from this exchange, and between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN2PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.